Representative Brown, would you like to move the February 21st?
I move the February 23rd minutes.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Good morning, Representative Rukavina.
Good morning, Representative Otremba. Is the meeting started?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Del Seaver's going to be playing. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Did someone move my bill?
Madam Chair, I move House File 390 with the recommendation to pass to, I believe, taxes. Is that where you're going?
Yep. Members, thank you very much. Pleasure to be in front of the new chair's committee. House File 390 is a bill I introduced this is the fourth year. I've had it around. I had been contacted by a constituent who said that he had been in Florida and they had property tax, free property taxes for veterans who had a 100% permanent disability as a result of military action and or military accident. I didn't get a hearing in 2004, and I offered the bill as an amendment on the House floor, and it passed 134-0. Never came back from the conference committee. In 2005, it was included in our omnibus tax bill, but because of the whole extended session, it never came back. And last year, again, it was in the bill, and it never came back. What it does, members, is exactly what I said. It just gives a property tax, free property taxes to those veterans that are 100% disabled as a result of military service, and it actually saves the state about, I think you have a fiscal note that shows anywhere from $1.2 to $1.07 million a year, because they wouldn't get the circuit breaker then, because they don't need it, because they're not paying any property taxes. I've seen estimates of anywhere, I believe, from 3,000. And I think the new fiscal note, which I saw online yesterday but didn't print out this morning, shows a higher number yet than looking for it. I think there's the old estimate was there were 3,700 folks that would qualify, and about 2,800 of them were homeowners. But I think the more recent fiscal note, if I wasn't hallucinating when I saw it yesterday, showed a little higher number with about a 1.8 million potential savings a year. So, members, I'd appreciate your support. You know, we all talk about supporting our veterans, but sometimes our soldiers, but sometimes when they come back as veterans in need, there is always isn't the support. And I think this bill would be a good message that for those who have been permanently disabled and as a result of their military service, whether it was in an actual line of duty or some other accident that occurred while in the service, this is the least that we could do for them. Of course, the fact that it saves state money is one thing. It spreads a little bit of the property tax, of their property tax, then to all the other businesses and homeowners in that taxing jurisdiction. But I think that would be insignificant to those folks. So I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Are there any questions? If not, Representative Faust, would you? Okay.
Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House File 390 be recommended to pass and referred to the Taxes Committee.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, members.
Long hair hippie.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good
morning.
Representative Faust, would you like to move House File 162 before the committee?
I sure would. Thank you, ma'am, Chair. I move that House File 162 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee.
Welcome, Representative Faust.
Thank you much, Madam Chair and committee members. I do have an amendment, and it probably is at your desk. And the amendment is 162A1.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Faust. I move the amendment, House File 162A1.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Haas.
Would you like me to speak to the bill?
Yes.
Thank you much, Madam Chair. This is known as the House File 162, and it's the GI Bill. It's under higher education, which puts it into a controllable setting. It's for veterans, for long-term military service, and National Guard reserves that have served long-term or have served after August 2nd, 1990. It also encompasses their surviving spouse or their dependents. Also under this benefit is the children of a totally and permanently disabled veteran. The bill is for a peacetime or war, so it's a pretty constant across the board. It doesn't have spikes. And it is in an affordable setting, I do believe. As you look at all the military bills here that have merit, I think we need to be advised of bills that are not overly ambitious but do the job. I have been working with the MAG Military Action Group on this, and it is also has been come down in the governor's package. I have with me today my co-chair, Representative Severson, and he will speak just shortly to the bill, if you so desire, and also introduce our witnesses.
Thank you. Representative Severson, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And this is Minnesota's GI Bill, which basically is a $10,000 opportunity for each of our soldiers that have meet the criteria. This bill allows them what's called the last dollar in, so that, interesting enough, when a soldier signs up for the military and he may be living at home, all of a sudden when he signs up, he now becomes an individual entity and they do not have to look at the parents' input for determining grant eligibility. So immediately they become eligible for a lot of federal dollars and some of those other grants that give them a little step up. This, in addition to that, now says that for each semester that they're going to higher education institution, they get an additional $1,000 on top of those grants and financial help. And we use the cost of living as the cap on that. And the amendment we just put on was basically about increasing that to a 1.2, so that it actually gives room for them to utilize all of the grants and the $1,000. And that the cap that we have on each individual is $10,000. So basically, $1,000 per semester, they have the opportunity to go for 5 years under this provision. It's got a fiscal note of $30 million, 15 on the biennium based on 7, 15 a year, 30 on the biennium based on 7,500 students taking opportunity for this loan. And we really believe that it's an incentive that we need to give to our soldiers, warriors that are coming back to optimize their opportunities. And this is not just for the Guard, but it's for all military. And really, again, as we go forward in this process, the people that we really want to recruit to the state are all talent. I mean, these are military individuals that have been proven the discipline and all of the processes that they go through to serve their country, and whether they come from outstate or not, I think those are the type of individuals we want to say to Minnesota welcomes you to this state. And I would ask that we've got Commissioner Dyrud here to testify this morning.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Commissioner.
My name is Clark Dyrick, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. The Minnesota GI Bill was carefully thought out, as the Representative Severson and Hawes point out, to offer help where it is most needed, but also to be offer some assistance to all who have served and are wanting to go to school. So it is a last dollar in, which has been mentioned already. Minnesota has a much higher rate of assistance for people going to school than our neighboring state, Wisconsin, does. There are many state grants in existence already for all people. Veterans aren't really aware of them always. They don't apply for the benefits they have coming. So the principle behind last dollar in is if a veteran comes forward, wants some assistance, hears about a GI Bill, they are going to be directed to apply for everything that they do have coming for them. The Pell Grant, which would be federal, all the state grants, and, of course, the federal GI Bill. So they would be applying for all of those. Then there would be the $1,000 per semester cap. There's also someone who has no need of financial assistance could qualify for $1,000 as well. So that is the basis of this program. It's $10,000 lifetime, but it provides some assistance. I think a case is trying to be made that we should compare ourselves to neighboring states. It's very hard. For example, Wisconsin has more veterans than we do, but yet there's considerably greater usage of the federal GI Bill in Minnesota than in Wisconsin. And I think part of that is, you look, there's just a very high number of Guard members that have been activated recently in Minnesota by comparison to Wisconsin. For example, I no one knows the real reasons, but I'm one conjecture. So we have a higher use. We don't know exactly the cost of Wisconsin's program, because they've had some form of tuition assistance. They have a new program, which is they are saying will cost $24 million a biennium, but that's in addition to an already existing program. So we don't know exactly. It's very hard to compare costs state to state. So we are looking. We know that there are currently 5,000 people using the GI Bill. We made some assumptions. We are assuming that probably 7,000 people would use this program. That's why we came up with figures that we did. So it has been carefully thought out with people from higher ed, Menscu, ourselves. So we think it's a fairly well thought out bill, which has benefits for the veterans who have served. And as we've pointed out in other committee hearings, 30% of veterans drop out in their first semester when they go back to school, and it's very important to have some assistance for them.
Thank you. Representative Junkie?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the Commissioner or either of the witnesses. Why are we excluding Guard and Reserve members unless they've served 16 years or more?
Chair Otremba, Representative Junkie, the thought behind that is the people who have not been activated. People who have been activated will qualify almost immediately. Well, Guard members will get free tuition while they're serving, but there's a range of Guard and Reservists who, if they have never been activated, will not have veteran status in the VA sense of the word. And this recognizes their service and says that if you have served, even though you have not been called up, you will at some point be recognized for your service and qualify for this.
And Madam Chair, so these same benefits that you're talking about the Guard and Reserve have are not available to active Army or other branches of the service?
Madam Chair, please clarify.
Madam Chair, Mr. Commissioner, you're talking about some kind of a gap, and I'm trying just to understand what that gap is. What's the difference between an active Army member who comes back and wants to go to school, and we're giving them $1,000 as opposed on top of all the other benefits they accrue for being a active military member, What's the gap? That what's the difference between then the benefits that a guard or a reserve army person gets the day they enroll? What's the difference? Where's the gap we're trying to fill?
Commissioner Dyer.
Chair Otremba, Representative Junkie. Again, if a guard or reservist is activated, they are right in the mix with this. I mean, they would qualify upon their leaving service. So I'm not sure the gap you're talking about. What, again, the 16-year is for the people who've never been activated, who do not have veteran status in the VA sense of the word, but would still get recognition of service. So I...
Madam Chair, I'm just trying to... Apparently the bill's here because we're going to give $1,000 to active. You must be an active Army member. Let me finish here now. So you're going to get that. I assume there's other benefits you get once you enroll in the U.S. Army that's similar to, you enroll in the National Guard. I know we get free tuition in this state to Minnesota, based on Minnesota rates. So don't you get any of that? And we're trying to fill that gap. And then the second question I'd have while you're up there is how long do you have to be activated? We have Guard members now that are being activated for 30 days at a time to fill in because of all the people that have gone overseas. They go on active duty, like on 30-day stints. Do they qualify that first day then once they've been activated?
Commissioner Guyroot.
Chair Trembo, Representative Junkie. There's language, I was scrambling here, looking for it. I think it's 90 days of service in a military, in a combat zone.
So, Madam Chair, so now it's combat zone activated. It's not just active military. So you have to go serve in Iraq to get this?
Go ahead and look. Madam Chair, I think when we're talking about the difference in active duty and what the definition of a veteran is under statute is basically someone who has been activated for 181 continuous days of active duty. So all of our military that are Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, and Marine Corps, typically who come off of active duty have fulfilled that requirement as a veteran. Under the reserve side of the house, in order to fulfill that requirement for a veteran, you still have to either have completed the 20 years and retired under that veterans.
Is that right?
16. But under this provision, it's for 16 years. And we're saying that cutoff for 16 years for someone who has not been activated for 181 continuous days should qualify for this as well. And as Representative Junkie stated, currently our Guard and Reserve do receive educational benefits under today's provisions.
And, Madam Chair, maybe we can hear from the new witness here now, and he can tell me what benefits he's not getting that we need to fill in here. That's what I'm interested in.
State your name for the committee, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Eric Onlis with the Department of Military Affairs, Minnesota National Guard. Just going back to your point, Representative Junkie, when we look at what the current slate of benefits are out there for the GI Bill, the active component gets their active GI Bill, and that's portable. So once they leave service, they can use that for 10 to 14 years beyond when they leave service. The current reserve GI Bill is only in force as long as you are an active drilling member of the Guard or Reserve. And unfortunately, as you referred to with deployments, a lot of people don't have the capability to fully use that. Now, the legislature in recent sessions has been kind enough, as you look at your National Guard, is that they have extended the tuition reimbursement program so that members of the Guard who serve overseas and unable to take advantage of that while they're serving, that was extended for 2 years plus a month-by-month extension beyond when they're beyond their service obligation. What this bill does here is it addresses those Guard reservists, and specifically look at reservists, who have served and have served overseas in hostile dangers or in war zone, but anyone who has served overseas, and gives them that portability of assets so that they can go to school because they were not able to when they were in active drilling status. But one thing that's very important from the Department of Military Affairs position is that the enlistment benefit for your Guard remains there, that if you're going to enlist in one of the reserve military services, you'll want to go to the Guard first because you get this benefit upon enlistment. That's why this does not go for just drilling members. because a drilling member of the Guard or Reserve would only get it as long as they're a current member.
And Madam Chair, and I don't have a problem with the bill, I'm just trying to understand, is there also, is this the bill where there's some gaps, we're suspecting there's some gaps on a federal level, and there's been some requests to have them step up to the plate also? And if they do step up to the plate, what does that do to this bill? Does it continue then? Or if the feds will extend that time period, like we say, so it can be utilized, which I think they should, are we going to revisit this, or is this, you know, what's going on the federal level with this?
Commissioner Dyrou.
Chair Tremba, Representative Junkie. That is exactly where the gap is in the federal GI Bill. And there's been testimony to that effect. And I believe there is legislation pending to show support as a state. It has to be changed at the federal level. But there are, unfortunately, reservists and guard members who are not activated long enough to qualify for the federal GI Bill. That is not the case here. And I did misspeak earlier. The 90-day combat is not in this bill. We use the Minnesota definition of veteran was 181 days of active duty. But the idea of the last dollar in, it should take into effect individual instances. So someone who, all the way from coming out of active duty to a reservist, I don't know if forces is the right word, but it drives the veteran, the new veteran, into applying for everything. And Minnesota, as I said earlier, has a lot of grants existing that neighboring states don't have. It is possible for someone who has need to not only get tuition reimbursement, but money towards room and board. So there are a lot of grants in the state. So this will drive a veteran to apply for everything available, but yet there is something there to not only for them, but for people who don't have as great a need. But it is a incentive to go to school, to come to school. And it's so, but yet it isn't free tuition. That gets to be very costly and very hard to control. So,
and Madam Chair, just final question to you folks or to Mr. Or to our staff over here. Is it 181 days consecutive, or is it combat zone? Which is it in this bill?
Commissioner Gyre.
I believe it's 181 days consecutive service. You cannot have
that. After shaking their head, yes.
Right. It is, Chair of Tremba, Representative Junkie, it is not combat. It's just 180 days of active duty. Yes.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Junkie's point on the federal level for this Montgomery GI Bill, there is a gap. I do have a resolution, and hopefully come before this committee, asking Congress to take action on this. Basically, what's happening for our reserve forces, who are being called up by unprecedented numbers now, the stipulation is that they have to be on active duty to receive that compensation under the GI Bill. This provision would basically say that as long as they have served and met out the requirements the same as the active duty, they have the same entitlements as our active duty counterpart does. So I look forward to being able to bring that before this committee and hopefully coerce Congress into fixing that problem.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Severson, you're about to be handed a statute, because I'm going to suggest one friendly change to the bill. It's at 197.75. Members, education assistance for veterans is defined in that section, and it provides for tuition for veterans. I'm sorry, it's not in the bill before us. It defines educational assistance as tuition for veterans and tuition, fees, books, room, board for the children of veterans. My suggestion is that the more expansive definition of educational assistance might apply to veterans as well under your statute, that under the GI Bill, under this GI Bill, that veterans would be able to receive funding for books, fees, room, board, and the like. It's just a suggestion I offer to both of you.
Madam Chair and Representative, the idea of the last dollar in and the cost of living expenses is kind of where this goes for this particular issue. Is that
My suggestion is that since educational assistance is defined in, I think it's subdivision one there, in a limited way for veterans, it says only tuition under that section, it may be that as the bill moves forward, we need to ensure that the more expansive definition that covers children for of veterans applies to veterans as well.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Hall.
Representative, when co-author here is looking at the language, that was the intent of the bill, and if it's not doing it, then we should repair it.
And if I missed it, I apologize.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative
committee members, one of the benefits of this bill is actually what we're doing today is we're looking at it and saying, is this going to do this? Is this going to do that? This is not a gist bill. This isn't just say people need help, let's get a wheelbarrow full of money and pour it onto it. This is a pretty well thought out bill. And one of the reasons that we say that it's long term, it's been planned for a year, but it's the last money in. And last year, this House and the state had the wisdom of putting veteran officers on campus, and that's going to be expanded so that we can get all that's given to them and then with a little supplement get them educated. But this bill is motivating people to apply for and helping people apply for the grants that are actually available both from the federal and from the state. And this really helps spend tax dollars wisely.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Madam Chair, to Representative Morrow's point, and our intent is to do exactly that. We'll double check, and we will definitely take that on board. If we see there's a gap in here, we'd love to work with you on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Comments? If not, Representative Charles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I renew the motion that House File 162 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Finance Committee.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
We do.
Representative Severson and Representative Haas, we have a bill that's up before you, if you wouldn't mind sitting in the audience a little longer. Thank you. Representative Leader. Representative Leader, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Fels, would you move 533, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam. Madam Chair, I motion that House File 533 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, before I describe the bill, I have an oral amendment I'd like to make. It's on line 2.28. I don't know which copy you have. I have one. It's the engrossed.
Madam Chair, we have the CR1. Is that what we're working on? 533 CR1?
That's the one I have.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
The oral amendment on 2.28 on that CR1. Delete the word public and it would read eligible institution means a post-secondary institution located in this state. It delete the word public.
Mr. Cleary, would you like to read that for us?
Madam Chair, if I have the right copy here, is it on page 2, line 30?
No, 28.
28. 2.28.
Yeah, line 2.28.
It reads, moves to amend. I'm sorry, who's moving it?
Representative Faust.
Oh, Representative Faust moves to amend House File 533 as introduced. On page 2, line 28, delete public.
And in...
Madam Chair, I so move.
Thank you. Is the bill like you would like to have it now?
That's correct, Madam
okay.
Chair.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have the bill in order that it should be, I hope. Actually, this is, a bill dealing with veterans' benefits, and it's actually a companion bill to the one in the Senate that's moving in the Senate, and it's also patterned after the bill that's in Wisconsin and Illinois, basically along the same lines. What the bill does, it defines who a veteran is and describes who will take charge of the program. In the bill, the commissioner is the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, and when I speak of director, that's the Department of Higher Education. And what the bill provides actually a educational opportunity for veterans, and a veteran is described anyone that served for 90 days in a hostile zone and has also served after August 2nd, 1990. But hostile zones defined in the bill as one that's by executive order, by the president's order, and actually it's not limited to Iraq or Afghanistan, but it's any of the hostilities we've had since August 2nd, 1990. And the bill provides full tuition for veterans up to 128 credit hours or 4 years, whichever is greater. It also describes, or not described, but a veteran or his eligible spouse and children from a deceased veteran, they're also eligible for these same programs. And that can be taken in any higher institution in the state of Minnesota if they apply or if they qualify. Basically, the public institutions are automatically in a bill in a private institution if they opt to go in, and that's why we deleted the word public, because many of the private institutions would want to participate in this particular program. One of the differences, perhaps, from a bill that you've heard a lot of the discussion on just previously is the fact that this bill does not have a cap, in a sense, and that's why we haven't filled out the fiscal note. They're working on the fiscal note, trying to arrive between the Department of Higher Ed and the Veterans Affairs and the Attorney General's Office to arrive at a fiscal note, and if this bill were to proceed, that fiscal note would then be applied in the Higher Education Division, where at one time this bill will end up in that division because the operation of the program or the direction of the program is under the Department of Higher Ed. Unless there's some specific questions, Madam Chair, I could go through. I think you've heard most of the questions asked, and it's basically the similar questions in this bill as you had in the last bill.
Are there any questions or comments? Proceed.
Madam Chair, I have a testifier that would care to testify to the bill.
Thank you. State your name for the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing this bill. My name is Benjamin Wogsland. I'm the Assistant Director of Communications and Research for the Attorney General's Office. Just a couple of things that I'd like to add about the bill. The bill is something that is supplementing the federal program. We have a great GI Bill at the federal level, but for some people that are not able to graduate within 4 years or are not able to complete their education within 10 years after service, they get left without assistance to graduate. And so our bill is looking to supplement those programs. It is last dollar in. You must exhaust all federal benefits and all state benefits. And there is a cap, but the cap is full tuition at the state level, which at the University of Minnesota right now is $3,700 approximately in tuition per semester. And the benefits under this bill would be for 4 years or 128 credits, as Representative Leader mentioned. I will just note there is one other benefit under this bill. You also can a veteran can also receive benefits if they've been medically discharged from combat as well. And that's all.
Are there any other questions? If not, Representative Faulks, will you renew the...
Thank you, Madam Chair. I renew the motion that House File 533 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Finance Committee.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Haas and Representative Severson. Welcome to the committee. So nice to see you.
Seems like we're just here.
Representative Paulus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 300 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Tax Committee.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Haas.
Madam Chair, we do have an amendment that was just drafted this morning, and I would like... I would like Mr. Cleary to introduce that amendment, if that's possible.
Mr. Cleary.
Madam Chair, I can describe you.
Describe it. Thank you for the language.
Madam Chair, I believe we passed out a summary of this amendment, a one-page handout prior to the meeting. And this is amendment called the H0300A2. And I'll read from that, more or less, read from that summary. So this amendment deletes House File 300, the First Committee Engrossment, by deleting Section 2 and inserting a new Section 2, or revised Section 2, as well as a Section 3. The Section 2 of the amended bill amends the section of Minnesota income tax law that defines subtractions for federal taxable income. As you recall, Minnesota's tax system, income tax system begins with federal taxes and income, and then we allow a few deductions. This would deal with those deductions for military pay and military
retirement pay. Excuse me. Does any of that need repeating?
So I would refer your attention to page 2, clause 11, near the bottom. And it extends on for several lines on page 3. This deals with military income earned within the state of Minnesota. Now, current law already provides that in-state military income is deductible for state tax purposes to some extent. It excludes, the benefit does not apply to certain full-time jobs within the National Guard, active guard and reserve, and another category of full-time jobs within the National Guard and reserves. This amendment would broaden the application of that deduction by no longer excluding those full-time jobs. So people working in those full-time National Guard reserve jobs would also have this benefit of having their in-state military income deducted for state tax purposes. And I should point out that that deduction is phased in over a four-year period. Now, in addition, within that clause 11, the amendment caps the amount of the in-state military income that may be deducted. and the cap is specified as the amount of basic pay that's earned by the highest enlisted rank. That would be an E-9, a sergeant major in the Army or the Marine Corps, with 10 years of experience. And that would be equivalent to about $51,000 per year, the amount of basic pay earned by such a person with that level of experience. And that becomes the cap on the amount of in-state military pay that would be deductible from federal taxable income. In other words, that would not be taxable under Minnesota law. Are there any pressing questions on that? If not, I'll move on to Clause 12. Clause 12 deals with out-of-state military pay, and you'll find that on page 3, line 13, beginning on line 13. Now, this language simply clarifies that a 2005 enactment applies not only to the reserves but to the National Guard members as well. So that when National Guard and Reserve are serving out of state, for example, when they go to Wisconsin to sergeant school, for example, or when they go to Norway for winter training, or Yakima, Washington for summer camp, as some people do, that would not only be not taxable if it were done by a reserve member, but it would also be non-taxable if it were done by a National Guard member. And that was the intent of that 2005 enactment. However, because of some federal definitions, the Revenue Department has opted to give that benefit only to reserve members, when in fact the legislature intended that it be given to National Guard when they're doing the same type of service. So this would clarify that. And the effective date would make that retroactive. The effective date is on page 4, line 18. That would make it retroactive to the enactment in 2005. I should point out that language, that clarification for Clause 12 there, dealing with out-of-state military pay, is identical to Representative Wolfschlager's bill. I believe it's House File 551. Accomplishes the same thing. And then I would like to go on to page 4 on line 7. You'll see several lines of new language. That's really not changed by this amendment. That's already in the bill, File 300, and that deals with military retirement pay. And it phases in a full exemption for military retirement pay over a four-year period. And again, that language is not changed. And the effective date language is also rather extensive, but most of that is dealing with first of all, dealing with the retroactivity of that out-of-state clarification, as we just discussed. But it also, most of that language phases in the military pay deduction for in-state military pay.
Thank you, Mr. Cleary. Representative Junkie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Council, I'm looking at page 3, and I'm glad we added clarified that it's the Minnesota National Guard also. But then it says for state active service as defined in section 190.05. How is that defined in 190.05? What does that mean?
It's my understanding, sir, Madam Chair, and Representative Junkie, that it's my understanding that 190.05 deals with retired military personnel who are called back to work in full-time administrative jobs, primarily administrative jobs, for the National Guard.
So, Madam Chair, I guess what I'm getting at is back to my original point on the last bill, but I think this one is more pertinent. What we're doing in this bill is trying to exempt, and probably rightly so, the federal tax on, or the state tax, the federal adjusted gross income, the tax paid on that to active Army, but then also Minnesota National Guard, who are active service performed in Minnesota. We do have Guard members now, members who, with the heavy deployments in Iraq and overseas of our Guard, a lot of these people are being asked to perform active duty service
They're reporting to Fort Snelling. They're reporting to other active duty within the state, but only for like 30 days at a time. And I think and believe and feel that those folks, regardless of how it's defined here, and that's what I'm trying to get at, we ought to be exempting them too, because what they're doing is coming off their jobs, which most likely paid better, and they're going on active duty, although it might only be for 30 days. I think it behooves us to try to get over to taxes and say we ought to be taking care of that tax deduction also for those short-term active duty members, even though it might not be 180 consecutive. They may do 30 this spring and 30 this summer and 30 next fall, filling in for some of these folks that are gone overseas. So I guess I don't have language, and I think it needs a little more research to see how that application applies, but I would ask that council comment on that. Is that included, or is that something we can include in an easy way, or is it something as it moves along before it gets to the floor where we could do an amendment that we could work on it?
Mr. Chairman, first I'd like to correct my last statement. I was defining 190.08, not 190.05, so I misresponded to your question. I hope I didn't mislead you too badly. 190.05 is the Minnesota definition of active duty. We call it active service. And there are three types of active service. There's federally funded active service, which is, say, going off to Bosnia or Iraq and the training prior to that, and that would be under Title 10. Then there's federally funded state active service, which is under Title 32 for the National Guard, Title 10 for reserves. And that would include such things as going out of state for training or staying in state, like airport security duty following 9/11, and the type of duty that you're talking about, being called up periodically for various tasks, might be 30 days, it might be 180 days, but the federal government tends to structure that so it's like 179 days maximum, so that they do not become veterans and get other veteran benefits. And then there's a third type of service, and that's state active service that's paid for by the state and is called up under the authority of the governor. And state active service would be for floods, tornadoes, and so on. I hope that answers your question.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Cleary, then, does this bill exempt the pay for the 30-day federally activated? You show up at Fort Snelling for 30 days, your taxes would be exempt? Under this bill?
That's correct. Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnny, that is correct. It would also exempt the pay, say, training pay, weekend training pay,
okay.
Summer camp. If it's,
okay.
If it's state.
That's a good thing. Thank you.
Anything else?
No.
All right. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Council, I'm going to follow up on Representative Junkie's questions. I'm down on 12, Section 12, again on page 3. I just asked the Colonel a moment ago to make sure to clarify. At line 3.1 and 3.2, we include the phrase, including the Minnesota National Guard, when we refer to active service performed in Minnesota. When we get to subdivision 12 at line 3.13, we don't include the phrase, including the Minnesota National Guard for active service outside of Minnesota.
Right.
Would it be a good point of clarification to include the phrase, including the Minnesota National Guard in subdivision 12 as well, for our guardsmen who are serving actively outside of Minnesota?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, I think that would be a good idea. I'd be happy to draft an amendment. Let me comment on that. It shouldn't be needed because members of the Minnesota National Guard are always part of the United States Armed Forces. As are other reserves. So the United States Armed Forces consists of the active duty as well as reserve, National Guard and reserves, the reserve component for all five branches, the Army, the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, and Coast Guard, all five branches of the United States. But some people don't believe the National Guard is really part of the United States Armed Forces, and in fact, we've had difficulties with the Revenue Department not quite believing that, and thus we get into trouble with their interpretation. So I'd be happy to put that.
Well, thank you. I want to make very clear, I do believe the Guard's part of the Armed Forces, but since we made it explicit above, I think maybe it's the lawyer in me, we need to make it explicit in both sections.
Mm-hmm.
second to that.
Any other comments from any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And Mr. Clare, correct me if I'm wrong, the inclusion of Title 32 was to capture the service and make it tax-free from the National Guard. Mr. Clary's got to lift his head up to hear that one. Mr. Clary, how are you doing? Keep your head up here, sir. Thank you. I'm talking to you. The inclusion of Title 32 really was the amendment that captured and clarified the tax law so the National Guards could have received those benefits. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hawes, you make a very good point. Title 32 applies only to the National Guard, and thus reading the language carefully, it would be very clear that they're included. But we'd be even more clear by inserting the language. And if I may, Mr. Chairman, I think I can read that amendment. That amendment would state that Representative Morrill moves to amend the amendment to House File 300, Amendment H0300A2, as follows. On page 3, line 14, after United States, insert, comma, including members of the Minnesota National Guard, comma.
I move that amendment.
Thank you, Representative Moore. Everybody get that down? Any discussion on that? If not, all those in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Back to the main amendment then. Is there any other discussion on the amendment A2? Has anyone moved the main amendment? Representative Eakin moves the amendment A2. There's no more discussion. All those in favor of amendment House File 300 A2, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
We got the bill. Yeah, now we need to discuss the main bill. Are there any other questions?
I was really happy. I thought you were agreeing with me, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion on the main bill, House File 300, as amended?
Mr. Chair, do you want us to present the bill then? Or?
Yes, please.
Well, thank you for all the discussion and making this bill a little better. This is an income tax subtraction, and we're working closely now to making people that should be eligible for that. It also does a military pay retirement, and military pay retirement is getting very popular, and it is found in all the border states. So what that does to you is that when people are coming back, they're asking, why should I come back to Minnesota if it is more of a financial benefit if I go to Wisconsin? And we want that trained workforce back in Minnesota. The military pay tax subtraction is really a works and acquiring a people of great talent to come back and fill the gaps that are going to be created by the retirement of those baby boomers. I think this is a very healthy bill. My co-author, Representative Severson, would like to say a few words and then introduce a testifier.
Thank you. Representative Hawes and Mr. Chair and members, this is really, as Representative Hawes talked about, this is the jobs human capital bill. This is, you know, when we take a look at our veterans who have served for 20 and 30 years, they have a tremendous education behind them. 50% of, or 75% of them have bachelor's degrees, 50% have master's degrees. And when they go into a retirement course, basically when they're getting out of the military on what's called a transition assistance program, they have 50 states to choose from as to where to go to. And so they have them laid out in front of them, and there are 42 states that do not tax military pension retirement pay. And so one of the first things they do is they look at that map and they say, what are my economic advantages for going to any of these states? When they take a look at Minnesota, there is no. The other thing they look at is, what kind of facilities, military facilities, do they have that they can capitalize to get some of the benefits that they have earned over that 20 and 30 years? And we are sorely lacking in those as well. So we need to to take a step forward to say Minnesota needs to be veteran-friendly so that we can recruit that talent, not because they don't deserve it, because they serve, they do. And there are other mitigating factors that put them in a category separate from teachers and firefighters. They've been moving for the last 20 to 30 years. They've been moving every 3 years, don't have the opportunity to develop equity in a house. They're not familiar with the community that they're moving to. The spouses particularly have not had opportunity to put down roots and gain a second career through that process. So there's some mitigating factors. But we're not even going to concentrate on those. We're going to the place where we say, you know what, these people bring to the state a tremendous talent in every field that really lays the civilian sector as well. And so I've got someone who's going to testify today here. Mr. Paul Wagner, who is with the Defense Alliance, who is a business that has recognized the talents that these people bring to the table. And not just that, but as a businessman, he understands that these talents are absolutely essential for what we need for a vision for the future. And as we come into this demographic shift that's going to take place in the next 8 to 10 years, where we're losing a lot of our federal workers or state workers to retirement, we need talented workers to come into this workforce, and this is a pool that we cannot overlook.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for coming here. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Paul Wagner. I'm with small business, Minnesota Wire and Cable. I also run a nonprofit. I have the honor to lead the Association of U.S. Army with 1,000 members, and created an alliance of defense contractors called Defense Alliance of Minnesota about 3 years back. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'll squeeze my story best I can, as fast as I can. Some of you heard me last week, and I want to repeat myself. But I'm a classic, St. Paul kid, civilian, that's recognized how much our veterans are needed here in the state of Minnesota. The small business, I purchased from Pop, and it started at the kitchen table with 9 kids. It grew and grew. It's 220 employees. Last year at this time, I said I got a $6 million payroll. Now I got a $7.4 million payroll, most of that on federal contracts that we've been bidding and acquiring and building intellectual property over in Energy Park Drive. The Association of U.S. Army nonprofit takes care of those that are deployed, roughly 900 members. The vast majority here in Minnesota, a good deal of them over in Hudson, Wisconsin, as they just hop over the border. A good deal of them are deployed. And I'll tell you, I get daily emails from guys that are deployed that are looking at this, looking at what we're doing as a state. I guarantee you, with the internet, access to information, folks are viewing this as a critical good news story for all our 3,000 guys that are over there guard-wise. Excuse me. We understand the family readiness groups, the Blue Star Moms, the So Much Comforts, etc. We extend ourselves to 14 support mechanisms as far as soldier support and those of the deployed. So we understand where we speak as far as the issues that these guys go through. But quite frankly, the last segment here is really about jobs. And the Defense Alliance of Minnesota was created and it grew and grew. It's now 1,870 members. It's 255 different companies. The vast majority of those are small defense contractors. 125 different organizations in 3 years. It's a consistent, a disciplined pattern, but we advocate four items. We bid federal dollars, federal grants. We breed high-end jobs. We hire veterans, and we save lives. That's our mantra. And so far, it's done very well. The idea that this, what it gives us, though, is the access to the best of leadership that is putting dollars into the marketplace through the DOD. The University of Minnesota presently brings in $680 million annually. They only bring $20 million from the DOD. Via this opportunity through the Defense Alliance, we bring in some of the best of leaders in the United States. The number one guy in the Air Force Research Lab, he's got a 9.6 9,600 employee base, $5.6 billion annual budget that he releases. He comes in and talks because these older veterans bring these guys in for cross-pollinating leadership. At the same time, these guys don't understand why Minnesota doesn't acquire more federal dollars than it is. The infrastructure that we have, the University of Minnesota, the big monsters, the number of patents and manufacturing that we have, the number of level of education is just ripe for improving our access to acquiring these grants. And I've got four of the most major leaders in the country that have been through here asking me, why aren't we more veteran friendly and why aren't you guys bidding more? Because you'd capture more. As God is my witness, you know, I don't want to be, I'm a true blue Minnesotan. And I don't want to keep being asked why we're not veteran friendly. You know, that's an embarrassment to me, quite frankly. And I don't get it. As an entrepreneur, it's all about effectiveness. This particular bill is a piece of the puzzle of being very effective in going after and harvesting these type A 24-hour a day, you know, kind of guys. They go all the year, you know, corner to corner of the state, you know, and you want these guys, you know, in your small towns. And so that's my story, sir. Anything I can add to that?
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Wagner?
Thank you very much. Good luck. God bless.
We have two more witnesses, Mr. Chair.
That's fine.
Mr. Dene is one of the leaders in the enlisted organization, retired organization, and he's going to speak a little bit to the economic issue in terms of a good comparative study between our neighboring state, Wisconsin, and Minnesota.
Mr. Dene. Thank you very much for coming. State your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Ralph Dene. I'm a member of the Retired Enlisted Association, which is a nationally chartered organization. I have a handout, and I'll do a little brief statement for you while that's being handed out to you. I support all the veteran-friendly initiatives that are going on in the state from the aspect of the military retirees, the enlisted association. I wanted to let you know that I was born and raised in Minnesota in 1964. After I graduated from high school, I entered the Marine Corps. I traveled around the world, took my family with me, and my wife and I are kind of a poster child for what Representative Severson said. We lived in 30 different houses in 28 years. So I had no equity in anything when I retired from the Marine Corps in 1994. I was the avionics chief for the Marine Corps working in Washington, D.C. And even though I was a senior enlisted person, I had to go through what's called TAP. It's a program that you have to go to prior to retiring to give you all the benefits from the VA and so forth. And one of the things they point out in the TAP Transition Assistance Program is that Minnesota was one of the states that fully taxed your retirement pay. They listed at that time there was about 15 or 20 that did it. Now we're down to about 7 or 8. But I'm not here to talk about the hardships or the sacrifices that one must endure to serve our country. What I'm here to talk about today is Minnesota's ability to attract industry and manpower to the state of Minnesota. As you've heard, we're falling into a critical shortage of manpower in the next 5 years in the state of Minnesota. The military retirees bring a well-educated workforce, with most of us having at least a bachelor's degree. I have a degree from the University of St. Cloud State. I have a teaching degree that I acquired after I got out of the service using the Montgomery Bill. On the fiscal side, retirees bring money into the state that was earned outside the state. Currently, we bring approximately $250 million to the state of Minnesota each year. But we only have 0.83% of the military retirees in the United States live in Minnesota. That's less than 1% of the retirees in the United States come back to Minnesota to reside. If you look at the little sheet that I handed out, I'd like you to look at page 2. This lists all the states in the United States and the ranking of how many military retirees live in each state. If you look way down towards the bottom of the list, you'll find Minnesota. We rank 33rd in the United States for the amount of military retirees that reside within our state. that's kind of a sad figure. We should be at about, oh, maybe 20, 25. And we should have a percentage of about 3% military retirees living in our state. Currently, if you go to the next page, I kind of did a little data off of the DOD actuary comparing Wisconsin and us, and you'll see that we are over $19 million a year behind the state of Wisconsin for money being brought into the state. Also, at the top of that page, if you look at it, the current paychecks that are being sent to us show that we have 14,429 military retirees here in Minnesota. The last couple of pages of this handout, you'll see a listing by rank of those military retirees that live in the state of Minnesota. This list came from the people that send us our paychecks, that came from DFAS, Defense, Finance, and Accounting Service. I've had a little bit of discussions with some of the research people upstairs, and that they come up with a figure well over 17,000. But this is the figure that comes from the people that sent us our paycheck. I included that email. I went to them and said, please tell me, how many people do you actually send paychecks to in the state of Minnesota? So I wanted you to have that data today. Again, we're looking at a critical manpower shortage. And as the gentleman before me testified, what better qualified people could you want to come and work for you than the military retirees? That's all I have at this time, Mr. Chair. If there's any questions you have, I'd be glad to answer them for you at this time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dene. Are there any questions? If not, thank you very much. And bring up your next witness.
And we have Colonel Aulis is here to testify on behalf of the National Guard.
Thank you very much. And welcome again. Please state your name and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Colonel Eric Aulis from the Department of Military Affairs, and thank you for this opportunity to speak on the military pay portion of the bill. This initiative provides a benefit that encourages enlistment in your Guard and other reserve components, and more importantly, as a retention benefit for our service members. As citizens consider joining your Guard, the emotional and psychological impact of a tax-exempt income far exceeds the cost of the program to the state. It's a tangible signal to new enlistments of the value of their prospective commitment to service. The bottom line is they see the citizens of Minnesota standing behind them in their decision to serve. The retention benefit is a much more significant aspect of this initiative. The current slate of benefits were largely developed and implemented while your Guard was a strategic reserve, basically waiting for the call to arms during the Cold War, for the Soviet attack during the Cold War. With incremental changes in benefits provided by the state, after 9/11, the Guard and Reserve are an operational force actively engaged in the fight. And during these times of increased deployment, service members return home to family and friends, and they have a difficult decision to make whether they want to continue their membership in the Guard or Reserve. This new benefit signifies the support of the legislature and, more importantly, the citizens of Minnesota of the importance of the decision to remain in the active drilling status as an active drilling member in the military and sustains the strength of your Guard, providing the state and nation a viable force in times of need. I conducted a survey of deployed service members over in Iraq, and tax-exempt income was by far the most important retention benefit that they would consider when they have their opportunity to extend or to re-enlist in the future upon returning home from combat. It achieved a rating of 6.8 on a Likert scale, with 1 being the least important benefit that they would consider and 7 being the most important benefit. And service members near universally view this as a critical factor in making a decision whether to continue their membership. The closest competing benefit was subsidized health care payments with a rating of 6 on the scale. And just as an aside, before the session started, we were researching other benefits, and the cost of that would be between $25 and $50 million a year. So it's not just the money aspect of it, because that's a very important benefit, but they just really connect with the tax-exempt benefit. Finally, a question that has been raised in the past is, why should this benefit be limited to the military, not extended to other professions that nobly serve the community and state, such as fire, police, or teachers? And I can best offer an answer in two ways. First,
No other service requires extensive separation from family and friends as a military. Our 1st Brigade Combat Team will be in country approximately 490 days by the time they return home and have been away from their family for almost 2 years. To put this in context, if we look at the 34th Infantry Division in World War II, they had 520 combat days. In no way do I mention this to minimize the service of the greatest generation, but to highlight the dedication of your current generation. Some members have deployed 4 times since 9/11 in support of our state and nation, and approximately 90% of the reserve component members are traditional members who hold a civilian job in conjunction with their military membership. These patriots are serving their civilian job and have taken the added step of serving their country through military service. Therefore, citizen soldiers serving in the fire, police, or teaching roles can also benefit by the tax exemption by simultaneous membership in the Guard or Reserve. A great percentage of Minnesotans from all walks of life have said they support the troops, and this is a tangible, patriotic, and visible way to show that Minnesota supports the troops.
Thank you very much, Colonel Allness. Any questions for this part? Go ahead. Representative Erdo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I maybe should have done it earlier, but commend Mr. Dene for being still here for this report, which I think is very, very interesting. Representative Severson, you are a veteran, correct?
Correct.
And you returned to Minnesota. I want to commend you for doing that. It must mean either for the weather or family or out of some great desire to contribute to our tax system. But
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, my kids said, "What are you doing?" It was family that brought us back.
Well, I'd just like to speak in support of this bill. I think it's been a long time coming.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Any other questions for either presenters or testifiers? If not, I will renew the motion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Could we just make one closing? Just one closing comment on this. You've heard the testimony today. I think one of the things that needs to be noted today is that currently Minnesota has less than half of the retirees that it should have. According to our population, the number of retirees in the United States, we should have over 32,000 retirees in the state. We have 14,000. Those 14,000 bring in, as was stated, $250 million into the state in retired pay. If we were to pass this bill, I believe that Wisconsin, our neighbor state that passed this bill in 2001, has seen an active increase, which was stated that an increase of $19 million per year brought into the state would offset the cost of this bill. And so, members, this is also a jobs bill in terms of federal acquirement of contracts. We're 47th on the list in terms of acquiring these contracts, and these military veterans getting off of active duty are key to acquiring those contracts so that we can move up the chain at least to the midsection, which in itself would bring additional billions of dollars of federal contracts into the state. This is a jobs bill. This is a bill that brings the talent and the money to the state of Minnesota that we heretofore have lacked the vision for, and members, I would appreciate your support in this bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Severson. Any other testifiers? If there's nothing else, I will renew the motion that House File 300 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Tax Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
We're on our way to making Minnesota a veteran-friendly state, and it'll be a win-win for us. Thank you.
Thank you. We will be going to House File 142 next. Representative Wardlow.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 142 to be recommended to be passed before the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Representative Heigerton. Welcome, Representative Wardlow. Please explain your bill.
Good morning, members and chair. Apologize for my voice, but I sound worse than I am. Some days are better than others. But one of the main things we do as representatives, part of our job is to listen to our constituents and try to help them when we can. And last summer I got a phone call from someone from Eagan, where I live, and he said, you know, I'm a disabled veteran, I get disability pay, and why is it that whenever I file for my property tax refund that I have to claim my disability pay on that Minnesota form, and that reduces my refund? And I said, I don't know. So I looked into it, and a few other states do allow them to exempt that disability pay. And then I got a couple more emails from people around the state asking the same question, so I said, I guess it sounds like a bill. And all this bill does is it allows a veteran who's receiving disability pay to not have to claim it against his refund so that he doesn't reduce his refund for property tax. And that's the bill. That's all it is. And by the way, this is a committee that I wish I was on. I just thought I'd throw that out there. I tried to get on it and they wouldn't let me because everybody I know in my family is either a farmer or a teacher or both. So I would have been a good fit, but they said no. They put me in mental health instead.
All right.
I'm just trying to butter you up a little bit.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. We appreciate that very much. Do you have any testifiers or anyone else that would like to talk on this?
No, I don't. I do not, unless someone from the... Some of the ones that might have testified went to a press conference. So.
Okay. All right.
I had one last time, but not this time.
Okay. We actually appreciated being a short presentation. So if there's no questions, any questions for... If not, we'll go back to Representative Pygert to renew his motion.
I do that. I renew a motion to have House File 142 passed to the Tax Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Pardon me. Okay, everybody. Representative Ruth is presenting the next bill, House File 284, and she is on her way.
She's not here yet, huh? While we're waiting for her, I'll renew the motion, or actually make a motion of moving House File 284 to be recommended to pass and be referred to the Local Government Committee.
Thank you very much, Representative Hagerton. Good morning, Representative Ruth. Thank you very much for coming. And would you please state your name for the record and explain House File 284?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Representative Connie Ruth. And I will just briefly talk about the bill. This is brought to me actually by a couple of our city council members from Owatonna. And I'll just read a little bit of what they actually wrote in it. This is a small but a very important bill, and what it basically does overall is it, if there are special assessments from a local government, city, county, township, it would, and it becomes a hardship for the people to pay this special assessment, if one of the members has been enacted into active duty, then the city would have the authority to defer that payment. And I'll read just a little bit of what the city wrote. So we asked this because we had a property owner appear before the city council after receiving notice of assessments against their property for the road constructed along their property, stating that they had a hardship against paying the assessments because her husband was serving in Iraq. I think that it would be a great benefit for our members of the National Guard or Military Reserve to be able to apply for deferment of special assessments while they're serving our country. And so as I said, it would be so that local units of government would have the authority to be able to do that. In this instance, actually, the National Guard is working with them and trying to figure out something to help them, but it was difficult. It is difficult for the city because there isn't anything in statute to help them. And, Mr. Chair, there is, if you look at the bill, page 1, line 16, it does state that this would be for one ordered into active military service for a period of 6 months or more. We actually first drew the bill for a period of a year or more, and the members in the last Vets Committee said, you know what, have you had any instances where people are called into active duty? They're not necessarily deployed. They're enacted, and it could be for a short amount of time, but it is a hardship. And yes, in fact, that had I have been contacted and was contacted as soon as the bill was dropped in that would be an issue. So we changed it to 6 months, and then but then afterwards people have members have emailed and said, can we just eliminate that and not have a specific period in there? Because if you notice for the rest of the hardship, this is under the Statute 435, this hardship assessment deferral, there is no amount of time specified there. And so I do have the amendment that would delete the for a period of 6 months or more.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion to do that?
The Chair, I move that we amend House File 284 and on page 1, line 16, delete the words for a period of 6 months or more. And the amendment is House is H02848-2.
Mr. Chair? Did I miss something, or did someone move the bill?
Yes, somebody moved the bill before you got here.
Okay, good. Thank you.
That's covered.
Thank you.
Okay, so we do have an amendment on the table. Is there any discussion on the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, back to the main bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I have Colonel Ahrens with me, who would also like to speak on the bill, if that would be okay.
Thank you, Colonel Alness, for joining us again. State your name for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Eric Alness, Department of Military Affairs. And just want to point out that there's a large majority of military people, when they're activated, they earn less than when they earned in their civilian career prior to the activation, or they suffer reduction in income because the other spouse will reduce or stop working during the time that they are deployed. As a result, many military families are living on the edge or trying to make ends meet during a deployment. And this deferment allows them to make sure that this exceptional cost would be delayed until a time when the family is settled again and back in their regular employment and have a chance to kind of catch their breath after a deployment and then make payments. So from a military affairs perspective, it provides a good break for family members, yet still maintains their responsibility as they see economic benefit to the improvements on their property. Finally, as was talked to briefly earlier too, there's a various number of grant processes available so that if a military family does need help, either through foundation or through Veterans Affairs, where they can get help so they make sure they do not lose their home. So there are a number of different opportunities for military families to get relief if they should need it in a financial manner.
Thank you very much, Colonel Alness. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ruth, I think it's a very good bill. Do you have any idea how many this would affect?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, Colonel might have a better idea of that. I don't have the answer to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I don't either. But as it is a deferment, there wouldn't be a financial note. But and based on where people live, we don't have an idea. But it was brought up as a family issue to a town, so it definitely highlighted a need.
Well, and Mr. Chair, and I would just add, what it does is it gives the city, or I should say city, county, or township, the authority. So it's up to them, and then they determine whether or not is it a hardship, and then how much should be deferred. And remember, the payment is required when they return, but how much of the hardship would they determine is a hardship, or how much of a disability. So the city government could decide the amount, or so it shouldn't affect really the state. But there, and the accountability measures that are into the bill, you know, are two. For one, the payment is required, and secondly, if you look on page 1, lines 19 through 21, it does talk about that the local government units would need to adopt an ordinance or a resolution establishing standards and guidelines for determining the existence of a hardship and for determining the existence of a disability. So it gives them the authority and the local control to be able to do that, and they would need to adopt a resolution to set that up.
Okay.
That
thank you very much, Representative
sure.
Ruth. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion to have House File 284 passed and be referred to, I believe, local government, right?
Thank you very much. And
as amended.
As amended. There we go. Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate it.
Okay. We need a motion to recall Senate File 138 and to recall that and refer it to the Finance Committee. Do I have a motion to do that?
So moved.
All right. Thank you very much. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And we also have three House files that will be referring to the Veterans Affairs Division. House File 1134, which is Doty. House File 551, Walschlager. House File 903, which is Severson. I believe that there are usually copies of those in your file that you can look through. And if there's nothing else, meeting adjourned.
Oh.